You're listening to Trek FM.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the journey!
My name is Charlene Schmidt, and with me, as always, is...
Tristan Riddell.
Tristan Riddell, we have something kind of big planned for today's show. And I'm pretty excited, for one thing, because we mentioned a little something last week about how Voyager had 172 episodes, and we were coming right upon 172 episodes of TTJ. This is episode 172 now. We did remember, that's check one. And as a result, you came up with a fantastic idea to commemorate the occasion. Why don't you tell everybody what that is?
Well, since this is the 172nd episode, we thought, why not do a commentary on the 172nd episode of Voyager? And that is Endgame. Now, technically, 171 and 172 is Endgame, but in order to do the second part, you kind of need to do the first part. So we are doing the two-part, like the two-part version. We're not splitting it up.
Right.
And so this commentary will be an hour and 28 minutes, I believe.
Woo. Now, I believe this might be the first time we are doing a commentary for both parts in one podcast. We have done two-parters before, but we've split them up.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
so this is
that's
a first.
Correct.
This is going to be a much longer TTJ.
Mm-hmm. As you guys know, if you're a longtime listener, you know how we do commentaries. But if you're new to the show, which we are constantly finding out, we do have new listeners emailing us and everything like that. What we do is
time.
We queue it up on Netflix or on our DVDs or however you get it. And we put on the subtitles and then we go 3, 2, 1, play. And then that way it's synced with you guys. But if you are driving, if you're actually on that commute, then you don't have the opportunity to watch it. And so we will make this as entertaining as possible without it. So, but before we get into the show, I think we should talk about our amazing associate producers as well as how they got to be associate producers.
Yes, let's do that. Let's talk about Patreon because this is really important. This is how the network continues. Without the help of our listeners, frankly, we would not be able to do this because it costs a lot of freaking money to run a network of this size and use all the bandwidth that we use and all that. We just keep growing and growing, too. I think the last couple of months, Chris Jones has talked about how we keep breaking records in terms of our download numbers. So that's astounding. And anyway, so if you are not a Patreon subscriber and helping out Trek FM and you want to do that, go to patreon.com/trekfm. There's multiple levels for subscribing that give you different perks. And of course, the more money you give us, the better your perks are. And so anything helps, though, whether it's $5 or 50 or more. We appreciate all of it, especially on To the Journey, though. We have our associate producers we want to thank. And so let's acknowledge those lovely people because they are indeed lovely. They love us. Those people are Kenneth Tripp, Jamie Deuce, Bruce Lish, Dante Hopkins, and our new associate producer, Brian Beliso. Brian, thank you for writing in and letting me know that I said your name properly. I do appreciate it very much. So thank you guys for supporting us, and thanks to everybody who supports us at Trek FM. Now, we have one other little housekeeping item we want to get through before we get to the commentary, so bear with us. This is very important to us, just as much as Patreon, and that is iTunes reviews. These things support us, not monetarily, but they help us find new subscribers, new listeners, people to join the party, and so it's just as important to our show as the money, basically. So we have a new review, and it's 5 stars, and it's written by Angel Finally, and this person subscribes to a lot of Trek FM, but they love us the most, and they love Voyager because it is the redheaded stepchild. This person has a thing for gingers, and I have to totally agree. It's awesome. So thank you very much for writing us a review. We appreciate that. Okay, now that that's all done, let's get going on to the commentary, shall we?
Let's do that. So this is how Netflix describes the episode. 10 years after Voyager's return from a 23-year journey across the galaxy, Admiral Janeway breaks all the temporal rules and journeys back in time.
And indeed she does. Okay.
All right. Let's do this.
Let's do this thing. We'll count you down. I'll say 3, 2, 1, go, and then we will go. 3, 2, 1, go. We hit play.
I know we've talked about this on the show before, but I remember, like, you know, it was heavily publicized that this was the series finale. We all knew what we were getting into, that this is going to be the end. And when we saw the Golden Gate Bridge and all the fireworks, like, I remember being so shocked. I'm like, what did I miss? What happened? Did the event happen an hour before? Like, what is going on?
Yes. Yes, I remember that. And I did not have quite that shock of a surprise, but I thought, they got home and they're not going to show us what happened. Oh, they're going to do that storytelling thing where they go back and then they show us how we get there. But we open with this nice, pretty visual, which apparently is something that Brannon Braga kind of had in his brain for a little while. He had that imagery and he wanted to use it in a different episode, but got talked down out of it because the writing staff thought, well, if we show Voyager, you know, with that beautiful flyby by the Golden Gate Bridge, it's going to take away from if and when Voyager does get home in the series finale, which apparently they had planned for at least the majority of season 7. They knew that they wanted Voyager to get home. So all the rumors about whether Voyager was going to get home or not in the writer's room at the very least were complete BS. That's what they wanted to do. That's what they knew they were going to do.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so there. That was always on their minds. It was just a matter of how they were going to do it and all of that. I mean, it's kind of funny, though, because, I mean, I watched season 7 and I think, boy, they really just didn't plan things out very well toward the end. And yet they were planning. They were trying.
Yeah.
I just think, as with Voyager, a lot of times they have great ideas and sometimes the execution just doesn't quite match up the idea itself.
Yeah, this is, I always thought this quote from Mulgrew was interesting about her hopes for the series finale. And this is what she says. I think Rick Berman and Brannon Braga know where I stand, but ideally I'd like to see a very poignant ending. I don't think this one should have had a red ribbon on it. I think it should be unprecedented and bold and rather stunning. What that means, I do not know, but I don't think it should have a fluid ending.
Oh my gosh. I remember this interview. Yeah. It came out, I think, just before the finale was due. And speaking of rumors, things were rampant about Janeway's going to die. She's going to sacrifice herself, and that's how the crew is going to get home. And they're going to get home without her, and it's going to be very sad. It's going to be very poignant, as Mulgrew said. And, you know, I think, actually, did we do an Endgame rewrite at some point? Because that's... I could have sworn that's something I actually suggested that they do in Endgame at one point.
I feel like we had to have, but I love the rest of the quote because I love how bold Mulgrew is. She just tells it like how she feels and tells it like it is. And she says, like, I hope that we don't wuss out. It should have a very strong, stunning ending. The viewers have invested in the characters and it's payoff time. I think Janeway has to go down with the ship, but not at the full cost of her being, whatever that means. We had to figure out how to do
what?
That. Yeah, I don't know what that means. But I feel like, yeah, I mean, Janeway did save the day by sacrificing herself. It was just future Janeway, which a lot of people saw as a cop-out.
Yeah, obviously the writers kind of met her in the middle and did not sacrifice Captain Janeway. They sacrificed Admiral Janeway so that Captain Janeway could go on.
Yeah.
I mean, that's fair. That's cool.
I love that this is, okay, so this is 23 years after their, what, how long were they in the Delta Quadrant?
7 years.
They were, this
universe. Crew is different. I think they're going to say it in this scene somewhere, aren't they?
Well, they already said it, that's the thing.
Oh, shoot.
I know.
I'm not paying enough attention to the subtitles.
Yeah, I cannot remember, like, but they should be, like, around the age they are now in real life, right? Like,
just very close, very close. I do have to say, for the most part, the actual cast in real life has aged better than they projected in Endgame. Don't you think?
Yeah, especially Paris, especially Bellana, I think Bellana looks amazing. Actually, okay, this is 33 years. Okay, so we're 10 years off.
Okay.
From when they started, more than 10 years.
I'm willing to bet that Roxanne Dawson isn't going to be quite as gray as Bellana 10 years from now. She keeps herself in really good shape.
Well, I don't know how keeping yourself in shape really deals with letting gray not happen.
Well, I mean, it just... I know it's not like that's not how it really works. It's just, I don't know. That said, she does look fantastic.
I was going to say, I love what they did with Bellana's makeup and her hair and everything that they did because she looks fantastic.
She looks like an aged Bellana, and I do like how her hair is a little bit longer.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah,
I do like
it's good.
That, yeah.
It's good. I am also, though, digging Admiral Janeway. I mean, she is a freaking cougar.
She basically, all that they did was just give her a gray wig. Like, that's all that they did. They didn't age her whatsoever. Like,
Hardly, maybe
they added a little dark circles on her eyes, but that is it.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't give her a whole lot of old age makeup at all, but Admiral Janeway is an interesting thing for me. I mean, there's a part of me that just really despises her. She's so bitter and worn down, and later on she's just completely self-serving about this whole thing, but at the same time she's got such great sass, and I love her look. It's all good. Oh, and they said to the journey. Woo! And that is, of course, this is the episode later on where we get that clip of Harry Kim saying maybe it's about the journey.
That's right. That's right.
So there.
Now, okay, am I the only one that hates these uniforms? I can't stand these uniforms.
I don't know if you're the only one.
Yeah, I hated them in All Good Things. I hate them here. I don't like them. And I hate that it's been established that this is what the future, you know, outfits are going to look like. I don't like it.
Well, here's the thing, Tristan, is these are the alternate future uniforms. So, I mean, that should probably be your first clue that this isn't real.
Yeah, but we've seen them in two different alternate futures.
But still, nevertheless, alternate futures. That's what I'm saying.
All right.
So, I mean, I don't know. That's probably our first giveaway right there. Because they used them in All Good Things and all that, it's just, I don't know. What is it about them you don't like? Is it the uniform itself, the design? Is it the comm badge? Is it just the way it all hangs together?
I'm fine with the comm badge. Yeah, I just hate the design. I think it's lazy. I think it looks like pajamas, and I just don't like it. But anyway, we shouldn't just talk about what we're seeing on the screen, but I do like that this kid asks a question, and she just basically ignores him, and she's like, then she moves on to the next one.
It's kind of a shame that Janeway didn't go into politics. She'd be great. Just totally dodge the questions being asked. One cool thing that I read about on Memory Alpha about this scene is there was a kid who made a request through Make-A-Wish Foundation. He had cystic fibrosis. He is in this scene, and he plays a character named Jesse.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And he's one of the cadets. So way to go him for making the freaking Star Trek Voyager finale on his Make-A-Wish request. I mean, man, he scored well.
Yeah, seriously. Absolutely.
How about that? That's great.
So we get to see morale before we ever get to see morale. You know, like how cool is that?
It is. That is pretty cool. You know, one thing that would be super awesome at some point in the course of the new Star Trek series set to debut in 2017, I would love to see Morale Paris in action somehow.
Oh, that would be interesting.
Would that not rock?
Whenever I see her, all I can think about is Susie Plaxton as a Klingon. I think they look so similar.
It's kind of true. She does look like a little bit of a younger Kalar. You're right.
Yeah. Now, what did you think about the Tuvok storyline in Endgame?
I love the Tuvok storyline. And for whatever reason, Tuvok is sort of the whipping boy about kind of degenerative diseases. I mean, he suffered in Year of Hell by being blind. Now he's got basically Vulcan Alzheimer's, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think even in the novels, there's something that goes on with him that he's staying on Vulcan as a result of it. Correct me if I'm wrong on that, listeners. I might be mixing up timelines or fanfic or who knows. I've been reading a lot of fanfic lately, actually. So I loved it. What did you think?
I'm right there with you. I think it was a great choice. I think it brought back the relationship that I wish they focused on more between Tuvok and Janeway. And it gave us some great moments where we see how much Janeway actually loves Tuvok. Not just, like, truly loves Tuvok. And that moment that we're about to see where she gives him that soft, intimate kiss on the top of his head is... It slays me every single time.
I'm with you.
This entire storyline was worth just that moment.
It's true. It's true. It is nice to see the relationship brought back. I mean, it's very clear how well she knows Tuvok in this scene.
Yeah.
And yeah, it just stabs me right in the heart. I mean, I don't know. Scenes between these two really do get you in all the right places. They do a fantastic job. It does make sense to me, for whatever reason, that Tuvok would essentially be going insane. I mean, Tim Russ does a great job where he's frantically writing things down on paper and who knows what's going on in his head, that sort of a thing. And then meanwhile, Janeway's trying to communicate a very important message here, and he's not going to fully grasp it until it's far too late.
Yeah, it's true. The only thing that I think surprises me, and obviously I know why they did it, was the fact that he's on Earth right now. I don't think he would actually be on Earth during this whole thing.
I don't understand that either. Why would he not be back on Vulcan with his family caring for him?
Yeah, I think the writers were just like, well, we need, you know, Janeway to be able to visit him, and we don't want to make a big thing of her traveling to Vulcan just to see Tuvok before she goes. You know, like, it needs to be easier than that.
Yeah. Oh, and how cute. She left him with the season 7 cast photo.
I know, the promotional photo. I love it when they sneak that stuff in. Like the episode where the doc's backup is stolen and it's like 700 years later.
Yes.
And they totally used a promotional photo of Robert Picardo in the corridor. And I'm just trying to think, like, in universe, obviously we know why they did it, but in universe, think about it, in universe, who took that picture? And the doc, like, how the doc was doing it was just basically like, okay, so, like, Tom, just like, I'm just going to put my arm up here like I'm thinking. Okay, I'm going to put my finger close to my mouth.
Or is the doc bringing the selfie back?
Yeah, because, like, in the 21st century, I'm sure you can do selfies without using your hands. So
totally.
I'm sure he did it himself, yeah.
Most likely, yeah, he had to do some self-portraits. And since he does have an interest in holo photography anyway, why not just set up the shot himself and do his little, you know, glamour shot? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just like, you know, he tweets out, you know, like, hey, walking around with my mobile emitter, you know, hashtag blessed. You know, it's just, I'm sure that's what he's doing.
Oh, gosh. Yep. He's taking photos of his holographic non-dinner for Instagram.
Nice. So.
Oh, my.
I'm never a fan of wearing all one color unless it's black. And
really?
She's not only wearing, what would you describe this color as? Periwinkle? Not only is she wearing a mock turtleneck periwinkle pants and top, but also periwinkle shoes.
Well, I mean, when you can just replicate anything, you can be as color coordinated as you want in the 24th century.
That's true. That's
true. I guess. Then again, more often than not, they're wearing their uniforms anyway, so I don't know. You tell me, man. Fashion in the 24th century does always kind of perturb me.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, I forgot that Barclay was in on this the whole time. I forgot that he actually helped her achieve this mission. I forgot about that.
Mm. Like, it wasn't that you forgot that he was in it. It's just that you forgot that he was conspiring with her.
Yes. Yes, he was a co-conspirator. So how what do you think about involving him as much as they did in the final episode, about him being an adopted member of the family? Do you think that was too much? Do you think that was just the right amount?
I think they played it just enough. They did it just enough, especially in the later seasons, to really keep things going with their contact with home. Like, once they crossed that bridge, it made sense to keep doing it, because otherwise, then we're going to kind of wonder, like, what happened to that? And yeah. I feel like they did it just enough. What about you?
Akuchimoya. Sorry, I'm sorry. Whenever I see that symbol, I get the urge to say Akuchimoya. Now, fun fact, if you just pan 5 meters to the left, you'll see Tasha Yar's grave.
And then her hologram shows up when you look at it. She's like, Captain Janeway, I always wanted to meet you.
Hey, that was pretty good.
Because she knows whoever she's speaking to.
Yeah.
And she can look right at you. And then the Windows 95 background pops up. I mean, it's amazing what technology can do. Sorry, I had to mention that.
We're back in the present.
Yes, we are.
Or whatever we perceive as the present. And yes. You hear this all the time that the writers were like, yeah, from day one, we knew that we were going to see the birth before the end of the show. Like, they weren't going to imply that the birth happened. And I think we can all appreciate that, because that would have felt like a robbery if they got home and B'Elanna was still pregnant.
Yeah, I think we might have been feeling a little shortchanged, to say the least. Now, what do you think about this scene, though? I mean, it's a very stereotypical, kind of corny, oh my god, the guy is so dumbfounded by the fact that his wife is now going to give birth, and it's real this time. although, actually, it's not. These are the fake contractions, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah, these are the fake ones. I'm fine. I was fine with it.
It's very common.
Yeah, Paris is, it's a very common cheap joke, but I mean, Paris does it in a way where he's flustered, he's not an idiot, you know? Like, I think that's where I'm okay with it.
I guess.
In my head a lot when he says, if this keeps happening, we'll never get any sleep, and then the doctor responds, you think it's bad now?
Yeah, for real, just wait until you have a screaming, crying, half Klingon infant. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I do love the fact that Harry took Tom's lead and started a betting pool on when Tom's child was going to be born.
I know.
Because Tom would have been doing this with anybody else's kid. We know that.
So I love that they brought back a name that we recognize with Chell, about how Chell is going to all of a sudden be the cook. And
yes.
It's just so funny because the other day I was on Literary Treks and we were talking about the Voyager comics, and you know, just going back to that episode that we did, like my first episode years ago with Literary Treks about the Voyager comics, and in the video game Elite Force as well as the comic book Elite Force, Chell became a badass. Like, Chell was a security officer and part of the hazard team, and it's just so funny that they chose Chell to do this, because in the show we saw him as a weakling who couldn't keep up with everybody else.
It's
and now
true.
He's just gonna be
yeah.
the cook. And, like, alternate universe Chell is way cooler than the prime universe Chell. And here is the worst relationship ever in Star Trek. Worse than Deanna and Worf.
And that's saying something pretty drastic, because that just wasn't right. I mean, even the actors were like, what the hell? And I feel the same way about this whole thing. It kind of comes out of nowhere. There's no real reason why these two need to come together. We've talked about it incessantly, and I feel like you know, the way I feel about Chakotay and Seven is the way non-Janeway and Chakotay fans feel about us whenever we talk about Janeway and Chakotay. Just like, oh, not again. No, 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 it didn't happen. Get over yourselves.
See, I think this scene's really funny because, you know, like, Kim is obviously trying to, you know, like, persuade Icheb to do a certain thing. And I just love Tuvok's responses. In a sense of fair play, Mr. Kim has never beaten me at Kelto.
Yeah. Yeah. It's blind leading the blind.
I love that.
Some things just never change for poor Harry. And then, look at that. He makes a Ferris wheel.
So, is this the only time we see Icheb in this episode?
I'm thinking, and it very well might be, because as soon as we start getting into the Admiral Janeway material, who cares what Icheb's doing?
Perfect amount of Icheb. Yeah.
But I mean, hey, he does get a cameo in the finale. Good for him.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so cool. Like, now that we've interviewed Kim, Garrett Wong. Now that we've interviewed Garrett Wong, I see Kim in this whole new light.
Yeah, we were not interviewing Garrett Wong in character as Harry Kim, but that was a very interesting interview. He said a lot of things, and especially about Endgame, talking about movie idea and all of that. I mean, I cannot agree more with his idea. And you mentioned earlier something about how Kate Mulgrew was just really telling it like it was. I think everybody was just kind of saying exactly what was on their mind by the time they were getting interviews done for wrapping up season 7 and the show at large. I mean, there were a lot of mixed reactions. I think bittersweet is sort of the operative word. I mean, I think after 7 years of anything, you're ready to do something new, get a breath of fresh air, do something different. But at the same time, when you've been doing something that long, it's also very sad because anything that you've done for any length of time like that, you get close, you get used to the routine, and then suddenly that part of your life is going to be gone. But that said, I mean, there was a lot of reaction about the finale. Mulgrew loved it. Of course she did, because she got to play two Janeways. And I mean, hey, why wouldn't you love that? And she's very good at it. I mean, they discovered that in Deadlock. And I think that's sort of what prompted them to doing all of this. Robert Beltran hated it, even though he got to kiss Jerry Ryan. He's just like, no, we're going to go out with this. That's a direct quote that I read.
Now, we should mention that, that Neelix is back on the screen, and I was absolutely over the moon that they found a way to bring Neelix back for the final episode, because it needed to happen, and I think this is a great way to do it.
Yes, I absolutely agree. I'm glad that you mentioned that. It would not be the same without Neelix, even if it's virtual. But they're still playing Coruscant.
I want to see his face. You know, like, I want to see Ethan Phillips' face, because he's been with us for 7 years.
He deserves to be there, whether you like the character or not. He was a part of the mission for all 7 years.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting that it was Seven and Neelix together. I thought that's always been an interesting relationship.
Yeah, a little bit of an odd couple, but so are Chakotay and Seven. So Seven's really branching out with whom she's associating with, I guess, is the point of this whole thing. She's really trying to grow as a person.
Yeah.
She's going to make a lot of mistakes. But hey, you know, that's what happens when you learn how to socialize. You find out who your friends really are, what's going to work and what's not, I guess.
There were certain moments. I like Endgame more than you do.
Yes. Although, I have to mention the visual we just saw of Starfleet Medical. That is a pretty building. I want to work there.
That is a pretty building. Yeah, there's a lot about 20th century Earth that I thoroughly enjoy. So one thing that I do want to talk about, I'm totally sidetracking what I started, but it doesn't matter. The Doc is not wearing his mobile emitter.
Which makes you wonder what's developed to either hide it or make him not dependent on it.
I think that was a great move, because some people could probably argue, oh, they probably forgot because it's a new uniform. But I think this was a conscious decision, and it leaves you wondering, oh, well, you know, like, what is it about him that's different? It allows you to fill in the blanks yourself, and I think that's fun.
Yeah, it's kind of true. You don't have to explain away every little thing. Although, of course, you're going to have those fans who think, oh, that was a mistake. You forgot to put it on.
Yeah.
No, not necessarily. Now, one thing that I've always been a little, I don't know. I feel like they had a really missed opportunity when the Doctor finally did give himself a name and he chose Joe. Why didn't they go with Bob? A la Bob Picardo?
I think that's a little too on the nose.
Oh, come on! That's fantastic! That's some clever stuff.
That's like saying, like, I'm going to name our daughter Roxanne. You know, like, that just doesn't work.
Oh, come on. Come on. So what you're saying is you're going to name your daughter B'Elanna.
If I can convince the girl. Okay, so what's Barclay's real name?
Reginald Barclay.
No, like, the actor.
Oh, the actor. Sorry. Dwight Schultz.
Thank you. Have you seen him in anything else?
No. I gotta confess. I know
either.
He's done other things. I do know that he does spark some outrage on the internet because of his political views, but I have neither read them and have no comment.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know. I didn't. Who cares? I mean,
but,
whatever.
Yeah, whatever. But no, I don't know.
Oh,
what
that's
else
right.
He
was
in
the A team. That's right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I forgot he was in the A team. He looks like he's doing a lot of voice acting. I'm looking up his
oh really
IMDb page. Yeah, he's a voice
good for him.
Now. Oh no way! He was in Batman: The Arkham Knight video game.
Oh, how about that?
Sweet.
There you go.
Well, there you go. I love that game.
Yeah,
anyway,
that's cool.
Yeah, sorry. Sidetracked.
Yeah, no, that's cool. It's good to know that. It's nice to know that he's still active and working in voice gigs. I feel like if there's any ideal gig out there, man, if he can do voice acting, heck yeah.
So jealous. So utterly jealous. I want to be a voice actor so bad.
I mean, you don't even have to wear clothes to do that job. You just
well, you
have
still
to...
have to go to work. Like, you still have to go to the booth.
Ah, whatever.
Whatever. So what did you think about the stammering thing, like him stammering once he lies?
That's very Barkley. Even after all this time, I mean, there's just some habits that are really hard to break.
Now, this shuttle, I mean, I know this is an advanced shuttle because of the shielding, but I really was expecting something different with the design. That looks just like a modified Type 2 shuttle, right?
Yeah. It still has kind of that boxy feel. You know what I mean? And like the future should be a lot sleeker. It's slimmer and smaller and aerodynamic.
Aerodynamic. It's space.
I know.
But no, you know what I'm saying, though? Like, I'm fine if they want to go in that direction, but I want them to go in a like, if they want to go the boxy way, if they want to go a thicker way, that's fine. But I just want them to, like, we saw the Type 2 shuttle so much in Voyager, or is it Class 2 or whatever? You guys know which one I'm talking about. But it's just, we should have seen something different. It's been... You know, a third of a century. You know, we should see something different.
Yeah, you would think that there would be a little bit more evolution in terms of shuttle design, is what you're saying, I think.
Yes, that is exactly what I'm saying. Because we saw that in Insurrection. You know, like, we got a cool new shuttle in Insurrection. And
right. Yeah, so, I mean, even that takes place way before this. That might have been just one of those things that slipped through the cracks a little bit. Maybe they couldn't invest the time... had to focus their energies on other stuff, despite this being a series finale. I mean, I know that they, as far as the set designers and whatnot go, I mean, they really tried to put their heart and soul into it, like they always do.
Oh, yeah,
but they
absolutely
wanted to have a strong finish.
Oh, and also, I was totally wrong. It's a Type 9 shuttle. I don't think there even is a Type 2.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. I mean, in a Type 9, yeah, that's, I'm sorry, that's not that great.
Yeah, I mean, I do like how sleek the Type 9 is, but I just wanted something different.
You wanted the Delta Flyer, didn't you?
No, I wanted a souped-up Delta Flyer.
You wanted the Pit My Ride Delta Flyer?
There you go, yeah. It's got spinners and neon lights. And
yeah. It's got a really blowout sound system, an ice cream maker, you name it.
Hell, I'd drive that, yeah. So this is Armstrong, right? Korra?
Yes, I believe it is. Yes.
Way to go.
Yes,
good for him.
Another
got,
person
got
we interviewed.
Last episode, yeah.
Yeah, also a fantastic, fun guy to talk with.
Yes, very much so. We got to interview him as well as Garrett Wong, and both are great guys and great interviews, and everyone should go back and listen.
Absolutely.
So say you could be an alien in Star Trek. Say that you won a contest, and they're like, okay, we're going to give you a walk-on role, and you get to choose what alien makeup you're in, because you can't be human, you can't be Vulcan, you know, it can't be Romulan. It's got to be like unrecognizable alien. Which alien would you choose?
Oh, well, I was going to say Romulan because I'd want to be kind of a shady character. But if we want to go full out makeup, I would want to be one of the Vidians. Because each one of those guys gets a slightly modified makeup job that's different from everybody else. That's cool.
Interesting. Yeah, that's a pretty good answer.
Yeah, or I could steal Durst's face and you killed Durst.
You killed Durst.
That's yeah.
We need to make that into a drop. Like we need. Why have we not made that into a drop?
I don't know, but we should.
Oh man, I can't believe we haven't done that. We've been doing this for 4 years and we haven't made this into a drop yet.
We have been doing this for so long. We forget our most common sound bites more often than not.
Oh, also, not to just continually, not to dwell on this, but a Type 2 shuttle is like the shuttle that's in the original series, so I have no idea how I screwed that up.
Okay. Are you sure it's just the original series, though? I could have sworn that was at least in TNG.
See, I thought so too, but the thing is, now I'm getting conflicting reports because I went to a different site and they're saying the one that I'm talking, like the one that I was talking about that was a Type 6 is now saying this is a Type 14, and a Type 6 is the one on the D, on the 1701D, so I don't know.
Okay, and I thought it was a Type 9.
See, okay, I haven't found an authoritative source, so if anyone can write in and let us know, like, what type of shuttle I'm talking about, the one that was most common in later Voyager, because they switched it on us, where there was the TNG shuttle that was very common in the beginning of Voyager, you know, the big boxy kind that, you know, Data and Geordi always flew around in. But there was a sleeker one that had, like, recessed nacelles. Let us know which one that is actually called. And if you could give us a source, that'd be cool.
Yeah. We do know that it has a number.
Yes. We are just looking for said number.
Yes. Now, something I always have wanted to know from you, and this is as good a time as any, is as the series was going on, did you ever envision the end and envision what everybody was going to do when they got home? Because I found myself doing that constantly as we got closer to the finale.
Well, I think that's a shared experience that everybody has. I mean, everybody's thinking about it. You know, everybody.
Yeah,
everybody,
but I want to know what you thought.
Well, if you want to know what I thought, you can go and listen to our previous episodes where we rewrite the ending and talk about, like, the 10-year anniversary. I think we talked about the 10-year anniversary.
That's where it came from. That's what it was. Thank you. Okay. Yeah, you're right. We did do that. Oh, well, shoot. Okay, I guess we don't need to discuss that again. You know, we've done this for so long that I do feel like we repeat ourselves sometimes.
Oh, I'm sure devotees understand that. Yeah. But I love this response from Paris. This is such a cool response, and you know, this is so real. He's like, Captain Proton doesn't have a wife and a baby on the way. You know, this is Paris's life. This is where he got stability. This is where he got his life back on track, is on Voyager. Why would he want to leave that? You know, everybody he loves besides his dad is here.
Yeah, I love that realism. Not everybody's really excited to be getting home. I mean, their lives are here. Their lives are better here. Yeah, and also that's a great scene to show just how much Tom Paris has grown up. You know, he's got very different priorities, and any good parent, once a baby's on the way, your life does change drastically, and suddenly all those goofy, fun things that you've been doing for kicks don't mean quite the same as much.
That's true.
I mean, you still might indulge, but you've got other fish to fry.
It's true. You might still eat Taco Bell at 3 a.m, but you know that it's not a good idea. You know,
maybe for different reasons. Maybe the baby's been up all night and you've not been at the bar till 3 a.m. closing it down. Different reasons, same outcome.
Okay, so Seven is talking about a procedure that she wanted to have in order to accelerate her growth in humanity. Okay, I'm oversimplifying it, but he's like, the doc says it'd be a series of several surgeries, which I think is realistic and cool. Why didn't we do that at the beginning of season 7 and see that progression over the entire season?
Oh, why didn't we? That is a fantastic idea.
Like, instead we get it in the, we're 40 minutes in or 35 minutes into the episode, and this is the end game. This is it
for
the
real?
Show,
and
we're just now bringing this up. I mean, because the idea of it was put into our brains when she started, you know, dating Practice Chakotay, and why didn't we pursue that? It's so frustrating.
I know. Well, I really love the idea of doing it even over the course of a whole season. I mean, that would have been great to have a lot of threads going out throughout the whole year, like Tom and B'Elanna had their pregnancy. This could have been Seven's journey, and it would have made sense after having a big Borg two-parter between the end of season 6 and starting off season 7 that maybe this was the next step for her. That would have made some sense.
Yeah.
Breaking away from the Borg just a little bit more.
And this is where the doc kind of bares his soul a little bit and says, like, hey, you know, like, if you need any help exploring your humanity, I'm always at your disposal, if you know what I mean.
It's cute. He still obviously cares for her very much. I don't know if he's still in love with her. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. But obviously there's still some things there.
I think so. He was. Yeah, I think he wouldn't have said that. Like, he wouldn't have said, like, oh, you can totally borrow my body if you want to practice. You know, like, I don't think he would have said that if he didn't have feelings for
it. Well, when you put it that way. Yeah, I guess you have a point. You don't say that to someone who's just friends.
I kind of want to name the episode that. You can totally borrow my body.
Okay, it's set. Go with that.
Which Doc did in reverse. Like, he borrowed Seven's body. Do you remember that episode?
He did, and ate a lot of cheesecake, among other things.
So great. So funny.
So good.
Now, did we see a futuristic Klingon ship, or was it just a Vachor class or whatever class that we've seen before? Do you remember?
You know something? I don't believe we've seen a ship in this episode.
I love that the tricorder, the 30 years from now tricorder, is just louder and brighter than the previous tricorders.
I wonder, is that the way the iPhone is eventually going to go? I mean, instead of making it smaller and thinner, it's just going to be brighter and flashier?
I know,
is it
going
to come with lens flares, heaven forbid?
Ooh, that'd be, I don't know. I kind of would enjoy that iPhone.
You would, really? Yeah. I don't know if I would. I wouldn't want people sending me Snapchats with freaking lens flares all over the place. Oh, wait, did we just see a Klingon ship?
Yeah.
We might have.
I think that was a little different. I think that was a little bit different. I think it was just a variation, but I could be wrong.
It was just a flash. I didn't take it in enough to really determine any change or not. Yeah. Darn it. Now, we got to mention the Ablative of Armor, because that is so freaking cool. I love this idea. So good. Yeah. So good.
No, I think it was cool. I think it was pretty far advanced for 23 years in the future. You know, I think that's because this is a game changer. Like, this is...
Yes, exactly.
This is insane. Like, the ability that this little shuttle has with the shields, as well as the torpedo technology that she gives Voyager. I mean, that is a lot of progress in two decades. Now, granted, I guess if you look at our progress from 1996 to now, there has been a lot of progress, but at the same time, not, you know, in the military, I mean, we're still using, you know, ships from, you know, the Vietnam War and the Gulf War and everything like that. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think the threat of terrorism that we've been dealing with in the more recent years has been a different kind of a fight. We haven't necessarily had to advance on a military front so much as a technological front. So that's where the focus has been. And it's really, I mean, affected us, you know, as a culture, more just in the terms of things like having an iPhone and computers, that sort of a thing.
You're talking about the advancement of informational technology as opposed to, you know, like weapon technology or something. Like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's less on the combat. It's more about yes.
Now, I'm sure there's people who are actually in the military who are screaming at us going, you don't even know how much we've advanced.
That's probably true. And if you're out there, please let us know, because yeah, we're completely dumb. We probably should get our foot out of our mouths here and let us know. Tell us what's going on.
I like this scene because this felt very TOS to me. This felt very original series of, quote unquote, keeping things in the family. Like, they're going to falsify logs. They're going to not tell the entire truth to make sure that their friends and family doesn't get in trouble. Like, Sulu did that. Bones did that. Kirk did that, you know, like, it was very original series. Like, you would never see that in TNG.
Well, and I mean, heck, that was Star Trek 3.
Yeah.
You know, they went out and they stole the Enterprise, went out to Genesis and got Spock.
Yeah. I just remember, like, it goes back to this conversation, ironically, between Catherine and Kim, where Kim's like, what? Like Sulu falsified logs? And she goes, yeah, it was a different time. It was more of the frontier. You know,
right.
It was more of the Wild West. And I love that conversation happened between the two of them. And then we got to see that culminate and actually go into an existence in this scene. And then they're kissing.
Whatever. Let's keep talking about Janeway and Kim. That's a great parallel. It really is. I love that. But then also, that kind of solidifies the notion that Janeway is a little more like Kirk, and the Delta Quadrant is a little more Wild West. I wish they would have maybe gone with that theme just a tiny bit more. than they actually did, but it
her
is
shirt's
still there.
Ripped off. She starts rolling around.
Yes, yes. She's battling the Gorn with really badly choreographed fights.
Mm-hmm.
Only it's Delta Quadrant Gorn, so it's got kind of Kazon hair, but still with the green lizard costume.
I'd pay good money to see that.
I think that's a great Star Trek Las Vegas idea.
Yeah.
Somebody make that happen. I'm not good at making costumes, so I'm not going to do it. Somebody out there can steal it. Run with it. Go. And yeah, these two, whatever. I'm sorry. I just don't get it. No. Those two are not a thing. No.
So, this is, okay, so we're at the 46-minute mark.
Yes.
Of the episode. And so from here, this is, actually, wait, no, we have 46 minutes left. I'm going
yes.
backwards, sorry.
Yeah, you're right.
And so this is, what did you think? Like, did they do the right thing by taking their time before the two Janeways met? Or do you think they should have met earlier?
No, I think they should have met earlier. I agree with Garrett Wong's assessment of this episode in that part one has really good pacing, and then part two happens way too quickly and wraps things up really fast to the point where you blink and it's gone and you're like, oh, that happened? It's too much.
I get that, and you're 100% right, but at the same time, I don't know if I would want to have two Janeways for that long. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Is it too much?
I feel like because of that, you know, like we have, like when we have future Janeway and we have past Janeway, it's never at the same time. And so I think it cuts it up enough because once we actually introduce the two of them together, we have them in a scene together. And you just don't want two Janeways in every single scene, you know, moving forward, I think.
I have to say, that whole scene with Janeway hugging Captain Kim, there's a thing that, I don't know if Garrett Wong was joking about it. I'm pretty sure he was. He wanted Ensign Kim to end up having a awesome Roland romance with Captain Janeway. I think he's wrong about this. You know what? That scene, they should have had, like, I don't know, some really passionate kiss or something. Because Janeway is a cougar. I think Harry would probably go for it, to be quite honest. And yeah, why not? I don't know. Maybe I'm totally off the wall, and maybe so is he. But even so, I had to make the comment.
Now, we talked about how badass the ablative armor was. You know, would have liked to have seen that in Nemesis? Like that technology implemented in the fleet?
I don't know. That's kind of a catch-22 if you ask me. You're sort of asking for trouble, you're asking for the time cops. I don't know. What do you think? Tell me what you think.
It makes me wonder. I think they made the right move by not introducing it into Nemesis because I'm sure it would take a long time for Starfleet to dissect the information and to implement it into their fleet. And when they get back, there might be a conversation where they go, you know what? We can't use this. And we're kind of pissed, Janeway, yeah, that you used it to get home. You know, like you altered the past and everything, or altered the future, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
I think it was a smart move not to see the Enterprise E retrofitted with that.
Yeah, you're probably right. Come to think of it, I mean, as cool as the effect is, temporal prime directive wise, you really can't because it's not really, you're not really supposed to be using it in the first place. So there is that.
And I think that would add more questions to your casual viewer.
Yeah, but in a way, I can see why it would be tempting just because the effect is so cool and, well, you have it now, so why not use it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I don't know. You can make argument for both sides.
There, like that right there is that I know that if you could open up a rift, you know, and they could have flown through, like I would have fought the Klingons. I'm sorry. I would, like, if it's like, oh, you know, that's the That's the Alpha Quadrant. Okay. Well, let's fly through. We'll deal with the Klingons. We'll just go to warp. And then once we get home, we'll slingshot around the sun. And then we'll go back to our time.
Right.
It'll all be gravy. Yeah.
Yeah. That's why a lot of people don't like time travel episodes, because anytime they come up with a new way to make it happen, it just sort of invalidates all the other ways that they could have or possibly should have used it prior. And I get it. I do. I mean, time travel episodes are fun, but you are seriously muddling with some issues there.
It's true, because like every single time it comes up, you can say, just slingshot around the sun. It's cool. Like, it's
right?
totally safe. Everybody You've just goes to sleep for a couple minutes, and they all wake up going, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I guess we're in the past.
Yeah, now granted, it's probably not the safest thing, but if a rickety dinky little Klingon ship can do it, I'm sorry, Voyager can.
So Voyager is a museum now. And
yes,
not just not a museum in space, you know, like at a space station or anything like that. It is on the ground. It is on the ground of the Presidio. Can you imagine, like, Voyager? Yeah, Voyager is a small ship compared to other ships, but it's still massive. Okay, it's a gigantic ship. Can you imagine this gigantic hulk of a ship just sitting down on the Presidio?
It'd be pretty amazing, wouldn't it? I mean, that's a landmark then.
That is such an eyesore, if you think about it. Like, you know,
well,
that, like,
yeah.
the locals would be upset, and they're like, it's disrupting my view, you know? Like,
I suppose, and seeing as how it's laying kind of horizontally, it's not a vertical object going up in the sky.
Yeah.
It's going to have, like, this massive clearing around it. And so, yeah, in a way, I think it does make it an eyesore. In that aspect, because it's not like it's the Eiffel's Tower or the Statue of Liberty or something where it's up there in the sky and you see it and you can figure out where you are in the city as a result of where you are in proportion to that. No, it's like this big old gaping thing. And if you're not looking at it from the right angle, you don't even see it. You just know that it's there because there's like this gap, which, no, I imagine that would maybe possibly be a problem, and yet I really want to go to the Voyager Museum. I want to tour that ship. Heck yes, I do.
That would be so cool. When you say that kind of made me think of this moment where I tried intentionally to freak out my future mother-in-law, where we were out to dinner, and it was, I think, the third or fourth time that I met this person, and things were getting serious with the girl, and I remember where she started asking me about Star Trek, you know, like she started saying, hey, I heard you're a nerd, you know, and
yeah.
And so I kind of wanted to warn her about what she was letting her daughter get into, like, because like I have such an intense passion for Star Trek. And so do you,
yes.
Where it's just I told her, I was like, oh yeah, I love Star Trek. And she's like, well, which one? I said, I was like, well, I love all of them, but Voyager will always hold a special place in my heart. And I said, I was like, every time I close my eyes at night, I am on that ship. And I said those exact words to her, and she kind of gave me this weird look like, okay, thank you for sharing. And I'm sure she doesn't remember it, but the sole reason why I said that, even though it was true, you know, you're not supposed to reveal that kind of information, but even though it was true, I did that because I wanted her to know, yes, your daughter is involved with a huge nerd.
Yeah, yeah. Above and beyond the usual Call of Duty there. Yes. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. And it was probably better in the long run that you were real and upfront. That way there were no false expectations. She knew exactly what she was getting into. And you know what? That's not a bad thing anyway. It just is.
I love this because we just talked about how future Janeway has an implant in her brain, in her freaking brain, so that she can fly her ship better. I do believe that this is the future. This is going to happen.
I agree. I mean, we've had Google Glass already. Give it a couple of centuries. Why wouldn't you implant it directly in your brain? And that way the thought just makes it happen. Seems progressive to me.
I think that's so, so great. And it's so fascinating from, like, you know, from a real world perspective. Yeah, that scares the hell out of me. But from a sci-fi perspective, I'm just like, bring it on. You know,
right. Like, as long as the technology is perfected and does only exactly what it's supposed to do as it's supposed to do it, it's cool. But I don't want to be one of those beta testers figuring out all the bugs and screwing myself up like horribly.
I'm just imagining like this, you remember the montage in RoboCop 2 where they tried to recreate the success from the first RoboCop, but they just failed miserably every single time.
Oh, yeah. It was kind of awful.
I wouldn't want to be in that line of experimentation.
Yeah, no. No, I don't. I wouldn't want to either.
So I always love seeing people outside of the ship, like in spacesuits and working on the hull. I am a sucker for that. Whenever you can show me that in an mm-hmm. episode or in a movie, I'm all about it.
It is kind of fun. In fact, one of my favorite scenes in Star Trek First Contact is when they're dismantling the deflector dish.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, that is naturally the first thing that pops into your head.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of the more prevalent scenes, I suppose, that deals with that sort of thing. It doesn't hurt also that Worf gets, you know, I guess hull sick. Is that what you would call it? Space sickness?
Yeah, space sickness. I love that conversation between the two of them where Picard's like,
yeah, I mean, it's
you
fantastic.
What do you remember
Worf
about your zero
people?
G training? Yeah.
Yeah. How are you so doing, perfect. Mr. Worf? Not well, sir.
Were you glad to see Alice Kriga, or did you long for the days of Susanna Thompson?
You know, I go back and forth on this all the time. I absolutely love Alice Kriga as the Borg Queen. However, her Borg Queen was killed off at the end of Star Trek First Contact, and
you think in such three-dimensional terms, Char.
I know. I'm such a feeble human. However, it does make a little more sense that the Susanna Thompson Borg Queen would be the one to send off Voyager. However, I'm absolutely fine with seeing Alice Kriga again.
I think it would have been, even though, yeah, okay, I'm excited to see Alice Kriga because they made the right move. Because if you can get Alice Kriga, you get Alice Kriga. All right, no,
yeah,
like no offense to Susanna Thompson, who did a fantastic job, but from a marketing standpoint, that is a huge way to appeal to the fans of the franchise because of First Contact.
Yeah,
but at the same
true.
Time, I think it would have been even more interesting if we got a third actress to do it.
Ooh, as in maybe the Borg Queen had died again.
Yes. Yes, and that could give some sort of credence to that theory of that there are multiple Borg Queens and that they're just a little bit different.
Yeah. Now, who would you have wanted to have been the third Borg Queen then?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask that. Somebody from, like, not somebody who's, like, crazy famous. Like, not somebody who makes, like, $40 million a year from movies, but, like,
yeah.
Somebody who is well-respected in the sci-fi, maybe horror realm. You know, like, because Alice Kriga, you know, like, was a well-established actress before she did First Contact and did some great horror movies, did some other sci-fi movies and things like that. I'm stalling so I can figure it out. I honestly couldn't. For some reason, you're going to hate this. You're going to hate this. Actually, you know, you're probably going to love this, but I have no idea why this is coming to my brain because I'm not even a fan of Babylon 5. But the woman who played Ivanova, I think, would be an interesting choice to play the Borg
Claudia
Queen.
Claudia Christian is the Borg Queen. No, I cannot imagine that. Although, wait, no. I can imagine certain aspects of it. The kind of the omnisexuality of the Borg Queen. She could tap into that sensualness and bring that out, definitely. But as far as the look and the feel, I might struggle with that just a little bit. You know who I thought of in terms of look? And I don't know how you're going to react to this, was Calista Flockhart.
No, I don't think so.
But I mean, she's got that very slim body type. I could see her in Borg makeup. She kind of has a similar look to Alice Kriga, but she would be different. She was a very well-respected actress. However, I think she was still making Ally McBeal at this time, and therefore it never would have happened. But that's who came to my mind.
What if they did something even crazier? And they got Jeri Ryan to play two roles, like Kate Mulgrew played two roles. And so she played the new Borg Queen.
Oh, that would have blown everybody's minds. Like, what just happened here?
And so Seven What's of Nine is like, on? What am I seeing? What's going on? And she can say, like, I'm the Borg Queen from 23 years from now or from 33 years from now or whatever it is. Or
oh
something like
God.
That.
Oh, my God. That would have totally screwed with everybody's mind. But we would have all just eaten that up and loved it.
Yeah, I think
and
so.
You know Jeri Ryan has the talent to pull it off. However, yeah. We could not outshadow Mulgrew.
No, never.
So, I mean, we got to have two Janeways, but Jeri Ryan could not have played two parts in the finale, too. No. Kind of a shame, though. That would have been really interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe that's an idea for the future. Jeri Ryan plays a future Borg Queen.
Oh, in 2017. I'm all tingly,
yeah.
Char. I'm all tingly.
Yeah, I want to see that, and I want to see Moral Paris. Kirsten Beyer, we should mention this, is a part of the writing staff for the Star Trek 2017 series. She is the writer of the Voyager novels. I did a small bit about Kirsten Beyer for Stage 9, the new podcast with John and Mike. And I'm super excited about this because she's a fantastic writer. What she's done for the Voyager universe has been absolutely monumental, and I know she'll bring very good things to the new series as well.
This is insane how many fantastic names they are getting to establish this behind-the-scenes crew. I mean, this...
It is crazy.
No one had any... Like, when it was released that Alex Kurtzman was going to be an executive producer, everyone thought, oh, okay, so it's going to be JJ-verse. We're going to get... Maybe he'll bring on some... You know, maybe he'll bring on Roberto Orsi... You know, and we'll just get the same old, same old that we got on. And then they're like, then they wowed us with Brian Fuller. They're like, no, Brian Fuller is really going to be the showrunner. And then they bring on Nicholas Meyer and then Rod Roddenberry and Kristen Beyer and
Kirsten Beyer.
Excuse me. I always do that. Kirsten Beyer and like so many other people who are veterans of Trek.
Absolutely. And also we just found out Joe Manosky, who's a veteran Trek writer too.
That's right. It's insane. It is in this... is a dream team.
I was just going to say the same thing. He really is assembling the dream team of all walks of Star Trek, which I think is going to do the anthology. At least that's kind of the feeling that we're getting. It's going to serve that theme happens. Really well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm absolutely all in favor of that, by the way.
Of the anthology?
Yep. I think that's the way to go.
I don't know.
I think they'll prove it right.
I'm not saying no. I'm not saying yes either. My knee jerk is I want to see a crew develop over years, not just one.
Well, here's what I'm thinking is they're going to have a big overarching storyline, but they're going to explore it from different angles. So maybe from the first season, we're going to see one crew and then it's going to branch out to other members of the crew because of The Wire. That's how they did it.
Yeah, but you don't know that that's how they're going to do it in the Star Trek show.
No, I don't know because I'm not a part of the writing staff. I'm just expressing that's how it could work.
Okay, well, I didn't hear that word could, Char.
Coulda, woulda, shoulda.
Okay, so they're in the nebula. They just got blasted by the Borg, and their armor's only down to 97%.
It's pretty cool unreal.
Yeah. And then they defeat the Borg with one torpedo each.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand why there's people who really don't like the Borg on Voyager. Yes, it is way too much, and yes, they defeat them way too many times, and way too easily. A blade of armor or not.
Yeah. And here's what I was thinking the entire time, is that, okay, you're introducing this new technology that completely can eviscerate the Borg.
All I'm thinking
about is...
It's so pretty on Voyager, I have to cut you off. The ablative armor, that really is amazing. That is such good CGI. I love it.
Oh, like when the torpedoes come out?
I'm done. Yeah.
Okay. Well, anywho, what I was saying was that, you know, like we're introducing this new technology to the Borg. So wouldn't they be able to study that information and then adapt to it? And so you just elevated the Borg 30 years ahead of the rest of Starfleet, who is still back in the 24th century?
Yeah, that is a problem. Because isn't that something we've known for a long time now about the Borg? They adapt, and they adapt quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Of course they would assess this technology, absorb its powers, and then run with it. Duh. That's what they're supposed to do.
That's what they do. That's their nature.
That does not really work very well. No. That's one of the many problems I have about Endgame, but we all know that I have problems about this. I'm trying not to get into them too deeply just because we've said that so many times. We've gone through it over and over.
Yeah. What did you think about the concept of a transwarp hub?
I found it interesting. It does kind of make sense that that's how the Borg space can be so vast and how they can make it work. And I don't know, visually it does sort of make some sense because the Borg sort of have like these, I don't know, sort of like spider kind of a sense, a look and feel. And so the Transwarp Hub also looks like a spider web. That makes sense to me. I get the logic of it. I mean, technologically, I don't know if it is necessary just because don't Borg ships fly at Transwarp anyway? Do they really need the network?
Yeah, that's the thing. That's what always confused me. Is that I don't like, even when I look this up, like I looked this up one day and I tried to figure out, you know, exactly, you know, like how this all worked, and I still couldn't get a straight answer from it. But all that I could gather is, you know, like Seven talks about how with this hub, that particular ship can go anywhere in the galaxy within minutes. And, but they still have a transwarp coil. So they can go super fast, like they can go faster than what we perceive as warp and on their own, but they can't traverse the entire galaxy in minutes. So I feel like that's the difference, where they can still go transwarp with their coil on their own, and which is faster than warp. But if they want to go to like, they want to go from the Delta Quadrant to the Alpha Quadrant within minutes, then they have to use that transwarp hub.
So it's essentially a advanced version of going through a wormhole and then using warp drive after you've gone through the wormhole to get to your final destination in a way.
I guess you could put it that way. Yeah.
That makes enough sense. Yeah. And I mean, visually, it looks really nice on the big astrometric screen and all that.
It does look really cool.
Yeah. They did do a great job with visuals. Gotta give them that credit. And of course, the Borg do look great. It's good stuff.
Yeah, they really do. Like, visually, like, however you feel about this episode, visually, it looks cool. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Now, one thing I want to know from you. The whole thing of the persuasive power that 7 of 9 is going to die, does that hold a lot of weight with you as to why Admiral Janeway is doing this? I mean, yes, she has other reasons, like Tuvok and, you know, other members of the crew who have died on her watch in her timeline as the years went by, but she really tries to drive this point in particular home, and I don't quite get it.
Well, I think, you know, it goes to the idea that, you know, Seven is special to Janeway, and but to a captain, they can't have favorites, you know, like they can't.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so like I get that. I mean, I don't think it would have been enough. I think there needed to be something else, like that needed to be more than just Seven. It needed to be more than just Seven and Chakotay. Like, it needed to be something huge for Captain Janeway to adjust to that.
Yeah, I think that should have been like a massive disaster, like losing half of the crew or something really catastrophic that maybe severely debilitated their chances, like, of getting home. But yeah, just Seven. Yeah, I do get it. She is special. But yeah, I don't feel like that's enough. And I agree with Brandon Braga on one point. He always thought that 7 of 9 should have sacrificed herself before the show was over. Like, maybe she would have been instrumental in getting them home somehow by sacrificing herself. That might have maybe had too many parallels with Spock sacrificing himself in Star Trek II. However, I could see Seven as a tragic character. I could definitely see how that would have worked.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, if Seven is going to die, let her die here and let her go out a hero.
Yeah, I just feel like they're just needed. I guess, you know, listening it out, it sounds like a lot, where it's just like, oh, Seven's going to die, Chakotay's going to die, Tuvok's going to lose his mind.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I feel like there needed to be, like, when you add all of that up, yeah, it sounds like a lot, and it is a lot, but they really did show that the only thing that got her attention was Seven dying.
Uh-huh. Right. Exactly. That singular thing.
Yeah. I don't think it would have been any singular thing. I think you're right, Char. I think it should have been something catastrophic where it's just like, or like, I don't know, where like B'Elanna's going to lose the baby, or you know, like a disease is going to run rampant through the ship and take out a third of your crew or something like that. You know, like, right. You're like, we'll survive, but it's hard. You know, like, you
yeah,
could save
yeah,
all
extreme
these lives.
Extreme hardship, like Year of Hell level hardship.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally, totally. Or another possible angle was, you know, we mentioned way earlier in this podcast how Kate Mulgrew wanted it to be bold and all that, and she kind of alluded to Janeway sacrificing herself. Well, what if Janeway does go out to sacrifice herself, but Seven goes in and takes that instead?
Oh.
Saving Janeway's life. Now, would that not have been something to really show the bond between those two? No?
That reeks of brilliant. That reeks like the end of Nemesis to me, which I did not like.
Oh. But then you know what? If they would have done it here, that would have been too close to Nemesis, and they would have had to have thought of something else because Nemesis came after. And maybe they would have made it better.
Sacrifice Voyager for the benefit of Nemesis. Heresy.
Oh, all right. I don't know. I still think it's a brilliant idea. That's just me.
I still think my idea is a brilliant idea.
I mean, anything to make Nemesis better, I feel like, is a sacrifice everybody should have made. Because that poor thing was just a hot mess, as our former co-host Lori would have said.
Yeah.
I love how everybody's just so casual, has coffee cups in the ready room now. Like, they really have loosened up.
Yeah, this was we've never seen them with coffee cups or mugs before in any meeting for the previous 7 years, but you know that the only reason why they like they were writing the scene and they're like, okay, let's have them toast at the end. We're like, well, yeah. What are they toasting? They don't have any drinks. Okay, everybody, write that in. Like, they just started handing out mugs. You know, like
Janeway has made it mandatory coffee in the ready room now. I like it. And here we go. Here's the speech.
Yep, this is the scene. This is the scene that helped define a show.
That's right.
Two shows.
Yeah. Aw. The scene does have a lot more significance to me now, personally, since we have used, the clip of it in the show.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like this is the bookend, I feel, to her initial speech in the first episode in Caretaker. Like, she had that great speech about making friends and some enemies, but, you know, like, uh-huh. We're going to find ways to get home. This is this ending speech. This is our way home, you know, but I want everybody to agree and everything like that.
I like and then, it. Yeah, it goes from we're alone in an uncharted part of the galaxy to, you know what, it's cool if we're out here. We're fine. To the journey.
To the journey.
That's right.
And of course, like, Kim makes his rounds. Like, he knows that he's giving an epic speech. And, like, he's walking from person to person.
He knows when he has his moment. He's embracing it.
Love it.
Yeah. And it is darn true. This crew is very loyal to Janeway.
Mm-hmm. To the journey.
That's right.
Here, here.
Yeah. I never could stand a tea-drinking Admiral Janeway.
I know, right? There's
just makes no sense to me whatsoever. Janeway is not Janeway without coffee.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah. No, Jean-Luc Picard drinks tea. Don't mess with a good thing.
Oh, so now that we're doing the commentary, like, I was, when I suggested that we do the commentary, I was a little hesitant at first because I know how you feel about Endgame, and you're very vocal about your feelings about Endgame.
What are you talking about? I've never expressed my disgust for Endgame, ever.
Now that we're watching it, and we're doing a commentary on it, and we're having that agreeable symmetry of 172 episodes, mm-hmm. has your feelings towards Endgame changed at all in the past 20 years?
No.
No? Oh, jeez. No. Okay. That was such a disheartening answer. I thought you were going to say, like, well, you know.
No. No. If anything, actually, the more that I watch it, the worse I feel toward it. When I first watched this, I watched it, you know, first showing and was ready to go. I mean, I had a little, it was just me, but I had like a little Voyager party, you know, in my head. It was my party. And I was you know, gearing up for it. And it felt so very bittersweet. I think I felt like a lot of the cast and crew did. I was watching this show for 7 years and it was coming to a close. And no, it wasn't always that great. I mean, there were times when I actually thought about not watching the show, to be honest. I thought maybe I just got tired of it, but I persevered anyway. I just did keep going with it. And then it's just, wow, okay, this is coming to a close. Sigh. And then when it was over, I was just, wow. Okay, that was it. Really?
I remember feeling very lost. I remember being...
I was very lost, too.
I was, yeah. I was especially lost after this one, because, like, when TNG ended, you were just like, oh, yeah, okay, good. Yeah, like, they're still out there, they're still traveling, but that was a good ending.
And we knew that a movie was coming out. I think that changed everything. Like, they're going to go on to movies. It's going to be so great. I was so excited about that. They were hopping right in the following week to start shooting the movie. Whereas with Voyager, that was, I think at the time, a question mark how much Voyager was going to be involved in the movies, because it was still the TNG cast. But yeah, there was always the room for the occasional cameo or what have you, or some minor bit. And we did get Admiral Janeway in one scene in Nemesis. That's as far as we got, unfortunately. And so even with Enterprise on the horizon, we knew that was going to come up.
Mm-hmm.
I knew it wouldn't be quite the same. This was always my ship, always my crew.
Yeah, and with the ending of Deep Space Nine, that one had tons of finality. I mean, like, that was an insane amount of finality for a lot of the characters. Like, their stories were, whether you liked it or not, their stories were wrapped up. Like, we knew where everybody was.
Yeah, there was closure. A lot of closure.
And with this one, like, it had closure where they achieved their mission. They got home. You know, like, that was the entire mission statement of the show. But for some reason, you know, like, when we were done, you know, like, when we walked away, we had this moment of loss. I mean, like, you do with every single show, because you're going to miss it every week. But at the same time, I felt like this one hit more, even though I enjoyed Endgame. I did. After I saw it, I enjoyed it. I was just like, okay, that was good. But I remember going to bed thinking, is that it? Is that all we do
right
now?
Yeah, I think we didn't get all the closure we wanted. We wanted to see them on Earth in our actual proper timeline. We needed to find out what was going to happen, and we got none of that.
But to be fair, I know we've talked about this so many times. I just don't think that would have been possible in that climate. I do not think it would have worked in that current scenario, like from a producing standpoint, from a writing standpoint. I don't think it would have been feasible to have them home for a couple of seasons. A couple of episodes. I don't know why. I guess I can't back that up. You guys might be able to write in and say I'm crazy, but I feel like, I think we once suggested that they do like a special, like a Christmas special after the show was over.
Christmas special. Oh my God. It's a Voyager Christmas.
Yeah. A Voyager Christmas, you know, like back in the Alpha Quadrant, you know, like something like that. Like,
oh my God.
I think that would have been fun.
No holiday specials.
Well, you know what I mean though. You know, like a one-off, you know? Yeah.
Like a little mini series or something. I don't know. I'm still a fan of the idea where if they could have even taken the last three episodes and done some way to wrap it up and give us a little more of a sense of completion rather than blowing it all up in the last half of this two-parter. Or, as Garrett Wong suggested, giving us a movie, I would have been totally happy about that. I don't know. I feel like there could have been a way. Maybe they would have had to skip around just a little bit, but I don't know. This does just seem so abrupt and so incomplete. Thankfully, we have the novels.
See, I don't get that much closure in the novels, because I'm not trying to sound pedantic, but, you know, they're not on screen.
Right, I know. They're not technically canon either, but they're the closest thing we have.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it is the closest thing we have, but I mean, I think they're great. I think they're fantastic. I think they're interesting, but at the same time, it's just extra, you know, it's bonus. It's not... I hate to use the word real, but it's just, like you said, it's like, it's not established storyline. I see these as, every single novel I see as what if, you know, like I see it as a what if story, you know?
Yeah.
Like, what if they got home and what if this happened?
I mean, I don't know, with Kirsten Beyer basically running the Voyager series now since 2009 and having a lot of continuity between all of her stories, I feel like she's created her own little corner of the universe. And to me, that is canon. That's as close as we're ever going to get, in my opinion. Now, one thing I want to go back and mention, I'm so glad that there are epidural hyposprays in the future.
Well, it's good to know. I just don't understand why they don't beam out the baby every single time. You know, like we saw them do that.
Yeah, but isn't there sort of like a risk every time that they try to do that? Like when Naomi Wildman was born, there were certain things the doctor had to monitor as a result of the fetal transport. So maybe it's sort of like a cesarean where you do it if you have to, but if you don't, you don't.
Okay.
Because you are potentially adding more risk.
Yeah, I think you're right. Maybe that was a circumstance. And you know, what if they crossed the streams with a plant, and then all of a sudden she got...
It's baby plant Tuvix.
It's baby plant Tuvix, and you know, it's just like, yeah, it's just a whole heap of mess that we don't need.
Yeah.
I love that she calls her Your Majesty.
Gotta use the proper title.
It's such an F you.
Yeah. Now, if there's anything that you could have taken home from the Voyager set, say they're starting to tear things down, what would you have ripped off and hoped that nobody had noticed? Because Ryan has her alcove, and I'm so incredibly jealous she got to do that.
Well, I think she probably got permission for that one.
Well, I can't imagine how in the world she would have hauled it off without them knowing it, so I'm sure she did. But like, if I could be on the set like and taken something small... No, you know what? Screw that. I'm going to go for broke. You know what I would take?
What would you take?
The ready room table.
The ready room table? Jeez.
I'm going to take that thing. And I'm going to put it in my house. And like, if, you know, I'm unemployed right now, but when I have a job again, all the staff meetings are going to be at my house. And we're going to gather around that table and have all the important people meetings around that table. Make all the big decisions. And then also eat dinner there and feel like I'm planning out my next mission. So there.
I would steal the plaque.
Ooh.
The dedication
plaque. Yeah. Now that you could just, you know, tuck under your shoulder and walk off very quietly.
I think so. I think that's part of my reasoning is that it's amazing and one of a kind, and you could also sneak away with it if you wanted to and avoid prosecution.
Yeah. I like it. Good choice.
In the latest Nerd Nuptial, a show that I host with my wife, we asked that question about any movie. Like, if you could have a prop recreation, like a 100% accurate prop recreation, what would it be? And she chose Leia's blaster, and I chose Batman's grappling gun.
Nice. Good choices.
Thank you. What would you choose if it was outside of Trek?
That is a very good question. Let me think about that for just a second.
You think about that while I talk about how weird and greasy and sexy the Borg Queen is.
Okay, you talk about her greasiness. Greasy sexiness.
This is weird. Like, this is, I feel like this is confusing for a lot of nerds. Like, this toys with our feelings and our emotions. Because she is, they clearly wrote her and Kriega played her as a sexual being. You know, like,
oh,
as
yeah,
a very
definitely.
Sensual, you know, person, and it's very interesting that she plays that, because I know it's because she's trying to seduce Data and she's trying to seduce Seven of Nine over to the Borg side, and it's she takes it very literally in the term of seduction, but it is kind of interesting because obviously the Borg don't have sex, you know, so
they don't need to,
so like, you know, why is she acting this way? But it works. I think it absolutely works.
Yeah. You know what I would take? I have my prop. I would steal a uniform from Babylon 5, the season 4 uniforms. I really like those, and I would cosplay as Susan Ivanova.
I didn't know that they had different uniforms per season.
Well, not per season. Like, for the first couple, maybe 3 years, they wore the Earth Force uniforms, and then when they became the Resistance, they created their own.
Cool. Very cool.
Yeah,
very cool.
And they're bitchin'. I like them. I mean, they're very, like, they're kind of basic, but they're practical, but they look nice still. They're not as bulky as the other uniforms either.
We've never seen a more forceful assimilation tubule implantation than that one right there.
Truth. I mean,
like, if you could punch somebody with assimilation tubules, that's how you do it.
That was it. You're absolutely right. Yes, yes.
So we're reaching the end here. Like, we're coming up fast.
We are, like, literally reaching the end game.
The end game.
The end of the end game. Indeed.
I do love this coming up where, you know, like, because it hurts the Borg, it's hurting her. You know, like, this infestation, this disease. And I love that, you know, the Borg queen just can't, like, she just can't contain herself. She can't even stand up because it's hurting her so much. And I love that she, like, throws body parts of herself off the onto the ground because they're defective.
Oh, that's so a very Borg thing to do. I mean, that's what she tells Data, right? You know, if you a circuit, you just rip it off if it's defective. That's exactly what she does.
Yeah, I think that was a definite play on that. I think the writers knew what they were doing by having the Borg Queen do that. It was a nice reflection.
I'd like to think that they, I'd like to think they remembered that. And if not, it was just a really great coincidence.
Now, as we know, you know, of course, they all get home, obviously.
Yes, they do. Spoiler alert.
what did you think about that moment where we weren't quite sure if they actually did make it home? Did you like that moment where they're like, where are we, Mr. Kim? Oh, we're exactly where we thought we would be. You know, like thinking that, you know, oh, they're going to be back in the Delta Quadrant. Were you fooled at all or were you not fooled?
No, honestly, I wasn't surprised. I just knew they were going to get this ship home. They were going to give us the happy ending. I was worried, though, like with what little time they had left, I just thought, whoa, this is not much time left, guys. I was really worried about how it was all going to wrap. And then it did wrap very fast right after that. And yeah, we were just talking not that long ago about wanting more. So there we go. Yeah, were you surprised at all?
I don't know if I was surprised. I can't remember if I was fooled or not. I think I had that moment of hesitation of, well, what are they going to do if they are back in the Delta Quadrant? I mean, like, we don't have enough time for a proper denouement. Like, we don't have time for a proper wrap up of, well, you know, like, set a course for home, and I wonder or not if we're going to make it. So I think that was enough for me to go like, okay, well, if they did this, they didn't have enough time to do it. So I think they're actually going to make it.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I just saw on Memory Alpha, this is the 9th time that Janeway dies in some incarnation in the series.
That's awesome.
9 times. Now, I don't think she has anything at all on Harry, but 9 is still a lot.
Actually, no, we counted everything. Every time an individual dies, and Janeway beat Kim.
Did she really? Oh my gosh. No, you're right, because we did go through every single episode, and she beat him by how much then?
I think it was 2. I think it was 9 really? For Janeway and 7 for Kim.
Oh my gosh. I forget the work that we've actually done. This is sad. My memory is awful. I know that, but wow, am I proving it today?
See, now these are my favorite uniforms. The First Contact uniforms. Yeah. I love these.
Yeah, they really do look so nice.
Especially the Admiral outfit where it's just a belt. You know, like that's the only added thing is a belt. I think that's cool.
It's true. Yeah, that does look really good. It does. My only complaint possibly is that they just look like they're too warm.
I know, right? Yeah, it does look like, I worry about the actors where I'm just like, did they keep it like super cold on set? You know, like you had to have been.
I hope they're cranking the AC.
Yeah.
For real.
I thought this was a well-crafted scene. Like, I really did enjoy this. I thought this was well-paced. It was well-acted. It had that energy. You know, it had that finality to the energy of, you know, like, crap's going down. And then, like, seeing all these ships that we've seen before, some new ships, some old ships, it was just so cool to see that.
And one of my favorite things is Voyager bursting out of the destroyed Borg sphere. That is one of my favorite visuals. Just busting out of there like a boss. That's Voyager.
Yeah, one of my favorite visuals out of all of Star Trek. Like this right here, like that entire legion of starships firing on the Borg sphere and then boom, explode, Voyager out.
Yeah. Yeah, I love it. Drop the mic. That's right. Yeah, yeah. And here we are. They are officially home. Now, one thing I did not know until just recently is that when they do the shot of Garrett Wong and he's got tears coming down his eyes for basically the announcement of Miral, that was actually meant for coming home. The realization that they were home, not for morale. And Garrett Wong was kind of pissed that they edited that and switched it.
Okay. I misunderstood what you meant at first. So when he's crying, like Garrett Wong thought he was shedding tears for morale, but they
no.
morale no?
Other way what? Around. He thought he was shedding tears because they finally made it home, but they actually were doing it a little more for oh my gosh, Morale is here. She's born.
I'd have to disagree with that because I never thought that that's what he was crying about.
Oh, really? See, I think with the timing, I get it.
I always thought that he was crying because it was home. I never once thought that it was because of Morale.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. And I don't know, just watching it now, I can actually see a little bit of both. Maybe he's just overwhelmed by everything.
That's what I thought because like yeah with the baby laughing and everything like that.
That makes sense to me.
Crying,
is everything.
Was, you know, yeah, like he was like you could tell he was getting emotional, but I think we get another shot of him where he's like full on crying and that's when I get the thought of yeah this is he's home. Like that right there. Yeah, like that I think it's just overwhelmed that shot.
Think so? Okay. Yeah, all right. But Garrett Wong apparently interpreted that just he acted it with that intention though.
Gotcha.
I guess, is the thing.
Yeah. Well, that's how it came across to me. That's interesting.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. We're coming toward the end here. And before we go, I want to mention that ratings for Endgame were very decent. A lot of people showed up to watch Voyager end. And it's kind of funny because we saw things like the Bond Voyager party on The Simpsons and stuff like that. It really did have a place in pop culture. 8.8 million people watched it, got a 13% share. Which was much higher than the average Voyager episode at that time. And it won 2 Emmy Awards. So not all of Endgame is that bad. I mean, it couldn't have been if they won awards for it. So in case you're curious, what they did win was Outstanding Music Composition for a Series, Dramatic Underscore by Jay Chataway, and Outstanding Special Visual Effects for a Series, well-earned, and they beat out Voyager's workforce both times for both of those awards.
I'd hope so.
All right. We don't need to get into your hatred for workforce today. We just did a fantastic long commentary of the entirety of Endgame. So we don't need to combat another two-parter tonight.
No, not at all. And you know what? I'm so exhausted that I'm not even going to tell the listeners what we're doing next week.
So, you know what? Until then, everybody, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!